Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back on Get Up, and this show is about to get a whole lot faster. Robert Griffin III is about to join us. And when I say fast, I mean fast. RG3 at Rich Eisen's charity event ran a 4:48.40. Just take a look at that. You still got the wheels, RG3. How about it?
Hey, Greeny, it was all for the kids. It was a great cause and had to run fast, right? I couldn't go out there and run slow.
What's the fastest 40? Anyone? Come on, Cindy, to everybody here on our set. What's the fastest? Who do you think is the fastest of this group? We got Legley, we got Reddick, we got Graziano, we got Bickerstaff. Who would run the fastest 40 at this table?
Right now or years ago?
At any point.
I don't think you would run the fastest.
Yeah, me neither.
I think it's going to be me, guys. I'm not athletic, but
Booger, I
think I'd win this
one. That's fine. Booger might be second.
Come on.
He might be. All right. We welcome you back.
I'm going with Dan. Hey, I'm going with Dan Graziano.
You're crazy.
Oh, the disrespect. Fair enough.
Huge mistake. He's got the cat-like quickness. We're at the Seaport. We're brought to you by Chase. All right, we got a million places to go, and let's start last night in Memphis. Holy smoke, the drama of the action last night. Game 2, Warriors-Grizzlies. I'm talking about early going. Tim Legler, we're less than 3 minutes into the game. Draymond Green throws it. Gary Payton catches it. Dylan Brooks does the rest. We got trouble.
And Memphis pitching a shutout to that point. Dylan Brooks trying to keep that going, gets there late, and you can just see the contact at the head. And when you take a blind hit when you're up in the air like that, inability to land the right way, and unfortunately catastrophic result for Gary Payton.
Yeah, Brooks is ejected. Payton's got a fractured elbow. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Then down goes Draymond Green on an inadvertent elbow from Xavier Tillman. He's on the ground bleeding. He's got to go back in. Look at him with the fans now. So we got that going on. Steve Kerr, how about the physical play?
That was dirty.
Not physical, dirty. Well, one man's physical is another man's dirty. Fourth quarter, J.J. Redick, 4.5 minutes to play. Warriors leading by one. Jordan Poole to Steph Curry. The Warriors have a 4-point lead, so the season is on the line, and Ja Morant took over.
Took over, fearlessness all night, found a way on all these possessions to get back to his left hand.
He's inside, he's outside. He scored 18 points in a fourth quarter that, again, had the season on the line. Timmy Legg, Steph Curry was not backing down.
No, great job here. Turns the corner, gets there. Pat did floater for Steph Curry. Overall, Steph Curry had a typical night, but it wasn't enough because of this guy.
Oh, look at the move. Legler did a great breakdown of that one a little earlier. Jordan Poole winds up looking in the wrong direction. Which way did he go? Morant would score 47. That one gave the Grizzlies a 1-point lead, and then J.J. another tough one.
Again, getting to his left, in the paint, elevating. There's just not enough size and length for the Warriors to stop them.
And then the Warriors are down by three, and wait a minute, they call Clay for the travel. They don't call walking in the NBA.
I will say this to Clay's defense. There were 13 travels that were worse than that game that were not called.
But they called that one, and John Morant is saying, hey, we're going to have some fun, and he is making it fun. We're all even at one game apiece in this series. Did I mention Morant had 47? He's 22 years old. That's his second career 45-point playoff performance. Look at the company that he is keeping. It's LeBron. It's Kobe, it's Ja, it's the one-name club, and he officially belongs in it. So before we get to any of the controversy, again, J.B. Bickerstaff, I don't have adjectives. Like, how would you describe what we are seeing in this postseason from Ja Morant?
It's the escalation of a superstar. It's that simple. You know, the regular season is one thing, the fourth quarter is another, but superstars are made in the playoffs, and he's continuously shown us what he's capable of. He puts that team on his back. It wasn't a particularly pretty game last night, but it was the fourth quarter, time to get the job done, and he went out and did it.
You know, J.J., I mean, I'm older than you, and so I appreciate the throwback mentality. Like he's got a modern-day game. He does all the things supposed to do in the game today, but he's got, to me, like he's got the head of someone who played generations ago. He's got that kind of toughness, confidence. He's challenging constantly, going forward constantly. What can I tell you? I love him.
He has a swagger and a fearlessness that is reflected in the rest of the team. He is the leader of that team, you know, along with Dylan Brooks, who has that same swagger and confidence. But Ja very much has the mentality, I'm going to line you up. You can't stop me one-on-one. When I get to that help defense, I'm just going to elevate and score right over you.
He actually has, I think, a similar mentality to Giannis in that he does, he'll not be denied. He wants to be not just a guy that's a good player, an all-star, or a guy even that wins one time or wins an MVP. He wants to be an all-time great, and that's what he did. You think about what we just showed in those highlights, and I think he had five of their last six field goals. If he misses any of those shots, they probably lose. That's how important each of those possessions was at the time. Because Golden State is 1-3 away from ending it if John Morant is not doing what he's doing.
And think about it. This is season on the line, face-to-face with Steph Curry. I mean, the preeminent player at his position of the generation and just not backing down an inch. So, Morant, awesome. Series tied at one apiece. Now let's get to the controversy. You saw the play there, Dylan Brooks on Gary Payton II, and there were other stuff like that. Here was a little more from Steve Kerr after the game.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was dirty. And, you know, playoff basketball is going to – it's supposed to be physical, but there's a code in this league. There's a code that players follow where you never put a guy's season slash career in jeopardy by taking somebody out in midair and clubbing him across the head and ultimately fracturing – Gary's elbow. He broke the code. Dylan Brooks broke the code.
All right, again, I'm sitting with three people who would know the code, particularly JB. I mean, you grew up in the game. Was that one beyond? Like, we've seen flagrant twos. Did that one go a step beyond?
Again, I think it was justly called a flagrant two. You know, I coached Dylan Brooks for 2 years in Memphis. You know, I know he was not intending to injure, but he put himself in a compromising position, especially when you hit a guy from behind. A guy's in the air, you hit him in the head. You know, his momentum's going to take him to the ground. And then, unfortunately, we saw how it ended.
It's a significant play. How about that? Steve Kerr is, he's taking this up a notch. I broke the code. That feels like a big thing to say. What do you think?
Well, coach knows this, legs knows this. When you get to the playoffs, teams talk about a no layup rule. And if you see Dylan Brooks, his body position is sort of, he finishes that swipe and lands. Like, there was a sense of desperation to adhere to that no layup rule code. And to coach's point, like, I'm not saying Dylan Brooks is a dirty player, but this was a dirty play for someone who had limited athleticism and could barely run a 40, apparently. You know, I actually broke my wrist four times on a similar play, three times in high school and once in the NBA. Once you get that momentum, and this was a little different than the Draymond Green play where he's going vertical. On a fast break, once you get that momentum, you're in a very vulnerable position.
And so we've got that factor here. Now let's talk about the outcome. Now, Gary Payton Jr. is going to be out. We haven't gotten the full diagnosis yet, but a fractured elbow certainly doesn't sound like he's coming back anytime soon. So the Warriors are going to have to go it without him. He's an important piece of that puzzle. What does it mean for the series?
He's most equipped to keep him in front. He's most equipped to challenge him, actually, at the end
him
of these
plays. Him being Morant, to be clear.
Correct. And when Ja gets to that place where he's going to hit that trampoline and go up, Gary Payton is most equipped also to go up and at least challenge him better than what Golden State is putting in front of him now. So this is a major factor. You know, I was talking to some Warriors fans last night, and they're all sky is falling now because of Gary Payton. I understand how important he is, but at the same time, he is a role player, a vital role player. But Golden State still has enough to win this series because, number one, how good they are offensively. And also, this is a team that really scraps and competes with what they have, and it may open up some minutes to play a little bit bigger lineup with a guy like Kuminga, who just impressed me so much this season and gives them a little more size and athletic ability in the back line.
Super quick, but last thought from you, Coach. What's the adjustment? If you lose Gary Payton, what's the adjustment defensively on Morant?
I think it's more Wiggins on him and try to send him to his right hand as much as you possibly can. Keep him away from that left hand.
All right, we will see. We'll have much more hoops coming up in this hour. Jalen Rose is on the way. Don't miss him. But talking about thrillers last night, we had one right here in New York. We had Sidney Crosby and the Penguins in the Big Apple taking on the Rangers, and this one was amazing. Third period, let's take it all the way there, tied up at three. I want you to watch Kaapo Kakko going into the net. His shot is denied by Casey DeSmith. DeSmith gets shoved out of the net, and there's a goal scored by the Rangers. It's Philippe Hedl, who scores. But I want you to take a look again. Kako clearly knocks DeSmith out of the way, and they disallow the goal. We talked about it earlier here. Is it the right call? It probably is. Fans don't like it, but it sends the game to overtime. And then, midway through the second overtime, the goalie, DeSmith, skating off after a lower body injury, in comes Louis Domingue, little-known goaltender in defense. Had only two starts all season long, but he was brilliant. 14 saves in the second overtime, keeps the Pens in the game. Into the third overtime they go, 6 minutes in, and this is how it ends. John Marino from the blue line, Evgeny Malkin, right place, right time, right result. He deflects it in, 4-3 Pens in triple overtime. And no one was more surprised than the game's surprise star.
I think we believe. I actually had quite the meal in between the first and the second overtime. I didn't expect going in, but maybe it sustained my energy. So it was cool, though. It was cool to be part of that.
You say quite the meal. What was it?
Some spicy pork and broccoli. Not the best.
Okay, a round of applause for Emily Kaplan, who asked that question. All kidding aside, that's an outstanding job in the moment of finding out what that meal was. This man ate spicy pork and broccoli and then stood on his head, at least figuratively, and made 14 saves. And you see, he's the first ever to enter a playoff game this late, and he winds up getting the win. All right, crazy night last night at the Garden. All right, to the NFL we go next. Just moments ago, the announcement that the Buccaneers will play the Seahawks in Germany on November 13th, as the league revealed its international games this morning. We'll go through all the rest of them for you in a minute. The question about this one is, will Tom Brady have his all-time favorite target, Rob Gronkowski, with him? This is what Gronk said to Sports Illustrated about a potential comeback. He said, oh yeah, if Julian signs with the Bucs right now, I'm coming back for a whole nother year. He needs to sign with the Bucs. Wait a minute. Is that what we're talking about now? Like, is all of a sudden, is Julian Edelman in this conversation, Graziano?
I think they're kidding, right? When they talk about Edelman coming back, Brady's done it a couple times on social media, and there's no indication from Edelman that he's interested in coming back. These quotes were at Gronk's draft beach party over the weekend, so I think we can take them with a grain of salt.
Yes, well, you can take them with the margarita that the grain of salt is around.
The whole thing, salt, I lime, think, everything.
Yeah. Quite literally there. RG3, let me come to you. What hangs in the balance here? Let's put Edelman aside for a minute. How important in your mind is the decision of whether Gronk comes back or not?
Well, Greeny, without Gronk, the Bucs are NFC contenders. But with him, they're the NFC favorites. Tom Brady has thrown 48 touchdowns and zero interceptions in the red zone with Gronk on the field in Tampa Bay. In the last two seasons, they've been the number one red zone offense. So you talk about them adding protection up front after Ali Marpet's retirement by getting Luke Gadecki. They go out and they get a big body pass rusher in Logan Hall to add to that defense. And they bring in Rashad White, a running back who's a home run hitter and can catch the ball out of the backfield and possibly out of the slot. And this Bucs team with Rob Gronkowski added to the mix seems like pirates ready to steal the booty at the end of the season.
RG3 with the insight. And yeah, and Boog, when we were together in Vegas during the draft, and as you mentioned earlier, they also drafted a tight end in Cade Otton. He likes having multiple tight ends on the field. We've seen great success with that in the past. So how's it look to you? Gronk comes back, Boog. What does it mean?
Well, I think Tom Brady has his security blanket. We all know the relationship and the rapport that they have. And to me, that will give the Bucs the optimal opportunity to contend in the South. And I say contend, Greeny, because I'm not saying the South is theirs. We forget the New Orleans Saints had two first-round picks, and everybody expected the Saints to go up and get a quarterback. The Saints said, no. We're going to get Chris Olave. We're going to get the tackle. We're going to show you that we think we're ready to win right now. They've beaten the Bucs four out of the last five times. And Greeny, I can tell you from talking to people in New Orleans, this division, they feels like is there. They don't feel like this is the Buccaneers division. They feel like they've beaten the Bucs. They can win this division. And regardless of how much we want to give it to the Bucs and say it's Tom Brady, I'm telling you right now, this division is a toss-up, and it all depends on Jameis Winston. If Winston is healthy and he continues to show the progress that he did last year, don't be surprised if the Saints win the South.
Hold that thought. I want to come back to it because I'm seeing a lot of nodding from a lot of different places in this room. We will come back to that a little bit later, but I did want to update you on the news. All the international games, as I told you, were just announced by the NFL, like literally in the last little while. And here's what they are. Three games in London, highlighted by the Giants and Packers on October 9th. Plus, the ESPN Plus exclusive game will be Jaguars-Broncos. Then one game in Munich. That's the one we talked about with Brady and the Bucks. And then a Monday night showdown will be in Mexico City, Cardinals and 49ers. So all kinds of international action coming your way. All right, coming up, after getting punched in the mouth in Game 1, the Celtics responded with a barrage of threes. Who has the edge in that series now? We're talking about it. Plus, one member of our crew says the Packers are heading back to the NFC title game, and Aaron Rodgers isn't the reason why. You'll hear it next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up. Dan Graziano was here all season long. We do Overreaction Tuesday. Would it be an overreaction today to say it's actually Wednesday?
It's not an overreaction. I had to check. I turned and saw that. I was like, wait, am I wrong? I thought it was Wednesday, but yeah,
it is Wednesday. Our graphics budget has been cut in half, so we apologize for that. Let's roll on here. Let's do the overreactions regardless what day of the week it is, and let's start with Kyler Murray. If I were to say this will be Kyler Murray's last season with the Cardinals, would that be an overreaction?
I say yes, it's an overreaction, because I still think there's time for them to get this deal done with Kyler Murray. I know that it hasn't started out in a good place, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's impossible that it all falls apart. But I still think that when all is said and done, they have him for two more years at least, contractually, and they can franchise him after that. That gives them leverage. I think in the end, I think they end up figuring out a way to keep it together.
Let's go to the AFC. If I were to say someone other than the Chiefs is going to win the AFC West for the first time in 6 years, would that be an overreaction?
It's not an overreaction. I mean, you can pick the Chiefs, but everybody else in that division seemed to have gotten better. The Chargers look loaded. The Broncos got Russell Wilson. The Raiders, you know, they added Devontae Adams from the Packers and a couple other key pieces. It's going to be competitive. At some point, somebody besides Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes is going to win this division, and this year is set up to be a very difficult one for them to extend their streak.
All right, let's go to another team that's had a streak of being great. If I were to say the Packers are going to make it back to the NFC Championship game again, would that be an overreaction?
No, it's not an overreaction. I mean, look, you remember a couple months ago before all these high-profile quarterbacks started changing teams, the news was that Aaron Rodgers didn't. He's still there in Green Bay, and that is always going to give them a chance. Look, I know the Devontae Adams loss is big. They have to figure it out. But this is a team that has won 13 games each of the last 3 years, been to two NFC Championship games in that time. You cannot count them out. I think they'll figure it out.
Well, and while a lot of people were scratching their heads at the draft that they had and taking the two defensive players in that first round, as I bring Booger and RG3 back into the conversation, Robert, you sort of liked what they did. Tell everybody why.
Yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction to say the Packers will be in the NFC Championship game, because they understand that offense puts cheeks in the seats, but defense wins championships. The last time the Packers won a Super Bowl in 2010, they had the second-ranked defense in the entire league. And the last 3 years, the Packers haven't been eliminated from the playoffs by teams with overpowering offenses. They've been eliminated by teams with stifling defenses. So what did they do in the draft? They went and got two monsters from Georgia in Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker. They added a weapon for Aaron Aaron Rodgers throw the ball to in Christian Watson. And they went out and built up the trenches by getting Sean Ryan from UCLA, who has a pair of McThickums for legs. So the bottom line is the Packers know that Aaron Rodgers is playing great, but defense can win you championships. They can win you the whole thing. Just ask Peyton Manning how he got his last Super Bowl ring.
I think that's right, actually. And Peyton got his first Super Bowl ring with Booger McFarland in Indianapolis. So I turned to you on that one there. And you and I were sitting next to each other. We were expecting late on Thursday night for them to do something on the offense. As the dust has cleared, do we think they got it right? Are the Packers still one of the teams to beat, Boog?
Yeah, Greeny, there's no question they're still one of the teams to beat because you have one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in football, in Aaron Rodgers. And we often talk about, can the quarterback make the weapons better? Look what Tom Brady did for several years in New England. Why can't we expect the same from Aaron Rodgers? So, yeah, he didn't get a receiver in the first round, but he got Christian Watson in the second round. He's got all the speed. He's got to make Watson better. And on top of that, Greeny, here's something we're not talking about. Why did they lose last year? It wasn't necessarily because of their offense, because the weather was terrible against the 49ers. Nobody was moving the football. Their defense played outstanding. They lost because their special team was bad last year. Mm-hmm. What did they do? They went out and got the best special teams coordinator in the league, in my opinion, and head coach Rich Bisaccia. So they will be better, but we don't like to talk about special teams, but that's the reason why they lost to the 49ers on that block punt. I think they'll be better, but we have to start expecting Rodgers to do what Brady did in New England all those years. You couldn't name the weapons, but Brady made them better. So why can't we expect Rodgers, who's making $50 million a year, to do the same thing? We have to hold him accountable.
I think that's right. And as we say, the great quarterbacks have put a lot of, you know, people's kids in private school over the course of time. So we understand that. They'll do that with these receivers. Having said that, is there still a move to be made out there for them? It does not feel like that wide receiver room is filled yet, Dan.
I agree. I think they will be in the veteran receiver market. Whether they can do it successfully remains to be seen. And you heard Aaron Rodgers reference that last week about how it may be difficult to convince the 49ers to trade them Deebo Samuel, for example, because they're a team they see in the playoffs all the time. But they're out there looking for more help.
All right, everybody stay close. We have much more football to go. And we got an unbelievable month of May here. It's mayhem in sports coming up, including this weekend. We got the Stanley Cup playoffs all week long, including Game 3, Panthers, Caps on ESPN. Then Saturday night on ABC, we got Game 3 of what's been a thrilling series between the Warriors and the Grizzlies. UFC 274 will be highlighted by two title fights on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. And then Sunday on ABC, the next stop on the F1 circuit, the first ever Miami Grand Prix. Oh, we've got everything coming your way. Meanwhile, as we go back to the Warriors and Grizz, who has the edge now in the wild, wild west? We'll answer that question right after this. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. We are back on Get Up with the game of the night, Warriors and Grizzlies. Last night, a thriller in Memphis. We'll get to the controversy, which came early, then the thrilling finish. Fourth quarter, just under 4.5 minutes to go. Grizzlies are down by 4. So J.J. Redick, their season is on the line, and Ja Morant took over.
He delivered in the fourth. You'll see in all these clips, getting to that left hand, that's where he's most comfortable. Warriors have to be able to force him right at times.
Steph Curry, of course, going back and forth with Morant. Curry would finish with 27, including this bucket here after Morant had put the Grizzlies ahead. Now the Warriors go up, and then the very next possession, Timmy Legs, look at the moves from Ja.
Yeah, I think Jordan Poole's still looking for him as he woke up the next day because he has no idea where he is. That's just elite-level individual offensive ability.
Ja Morant, 47 points last night, 18 of them in the fourth quarter. That one giving the Grizzlies is a late 3-point lead, and now the Warriors' last chance. In a league where they never call a travel, they call Klay Thompson for a walk there, and that's how it ends. Grizzlies take it 106-101, the old school Ja Morant. Yeah, we're having some fun. We're even at one game apiece headed back to San Francisco, and the fun steps up a notch. Jalen Rose has made his way in the studio, baby.
Great to see you, Jake.
You too.
Okay, Ja, I mean, we're coming all morning long. We're trying to come up with the right words. How do you describe what we're seeing in
a
him right now?
A superstar. And so many times in the NBA, these guys will tell you, you win because you have that person on your roster. Luka's that for the Mavs. Ja's become that for the Memphis Grizzlies. And we know this was do or die. 47 big points, 18 in the fourth quarter. He got aided by Gary Payton II being out of the game. But also, again, uber aggressive. The shot attempts, what, he took 30 shots in the game?
31 shots, yeah.
When we were watching the Nets lose to the Celtics, the one thing that was head-scratching to many of us is the lack of aggression by Kevin Durant, going fourth quarters by only taking one shot. Ja was not allowing his team to go down 0-2.
And quickly, he's also got, and you played in the 90s, he's got sort of an old school mentality, doesn't he? I know he's got a new school game, but he's got kind of an old school feel to him.
Definitely, and it's a do or die thing with him. And what makes it old school, Greeny, is it's not just that he's buying into his team and trying to win a championship. He's bought into the city. Like, right now, nobody thinks Ja Morant might leave after his rookie deal.
Oh, no.
Right? No, right. Nobody thinks he's leaving after his rookie. You might as well have Woj break the news right now that he signed a 10-year deal in Memphis.
You know
he'll be there. That investment, everybody feels
and it. You know what else he's not doing? JJ, I'll turn to you as the most recent play here. He's not calling up all the other young stars in the league and saying, hey, let's all play together at some point here. He's going to beat each and every one of them. That's what I'm talking about with old school.
Old school. He's embraced the city that drafted him. He's embraced the organization that drafted him. He's embraced his teammates. Mm-hmm. He's got a swagger and a fearlessness that is an embodiment of this entire organization and team. They all feed off of that.
Mm-hmm. So, Legs, then let me come to you, because I have been oft described as a professional overreactor. I tend to overreact to the things I see. So after game one, my thinking was, well, if Memphis isn't going to win that game, they're done. They obviously have no chance. Draymond got thrown out of the game. They were playing at home. Klay played bad, and they lose the game. I figure that's it. Golden State's got it. Now, after last night, I don't know what to think about this series. What are you thinking?
They're clearly in it. And the one thing about Memphis going into this, and we said it all along, for whatever reason, they looked at that team as having Golden State's number. They just have no fear of them whatsoever. So you need the mental battle. You need to start in that place. Here's the thing, though. You're going to see some different performances out of the Golden State Warriors, particular guys, when you get back home, I believe. I think Klay Thompson is due to go off in one of these games. He just looks out of rhythm right now, out of sync. I thought last night his shot selection actually was hurting him and hurting their team. He was forcing it so badly. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of time. And I think maybe at home he finally gets going. I think Golden State ultimately has too many answers offensively for Memphis. But there's no question. When you got a Ja Morant, you're not going away. This is going to be a long series.
Jay, we will have game three of this series Saturday night on ABC. How do you assess where they are now after two?
You just said the key. Klay Thompson got to play better. And the last couple of years, Greeny, he had major injuries. He's come back. He's shown flashes of being the old Klay Thompson. But I said this to you after when we were watching the other game. Mm-hmm. His wheels ain't the same. And he's going against young players who are energetic, who are athletic, and who have the ability to make him uncomfortable. Like, he's not much of a ball handler. So when Poole's in the game, that's an opportunity for him to get going because Poole can dribble pass and shoot and opens up for him. So that's what has to happen when they get home. Somebody has to find a way to get Klay a couple of open shots to kickstart his game.
And JJ, let's throw in the fact that they seem certain now to have lost Gary Payton II for the rest of the series, and we don't have a complete diagnosis yet, but a fractured elbow. He's not coming back. So how does that impact what we will see going forward?
He's one of the guys that can maybe stay in front of Ja, and certainly one of the guys that can contest him at the rim. So this is, you know, he guarded him on the very last play. He was the primary defender on the last play of game one. Mm-hmm. Klay, of course, came over in a help position. So this hurts their team. To both those guys' points, though, when is the last time we saw the Warriors shoot 7-for-38 from three? Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, a combined 6-for-29, plus Andrew Wiggins was 1-for-7. Like, this was a little bit of an anomaly game. Give Memphis a lot of credit. Give Ja Morant a lot of credit for what he did in the fourth quarter. But the Warriors are going to shoot the ball better.
Did I mention he had 47 last night? Okay. Ooh. So then we got to get to stuff that we talked about at the beginning of the hour, but we didn't see it in the highlight there. Dylan Brooks taking out Gary Payton II with a reckless, at minimum, play. And here was how Steve Kerr described it after.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was dirty. And, you know, playoff basketball is going to – it's supposed to be physical, but there's a code in this league. There's a code – that players follow, where you never put a guy's season slash career in jeopardy by taking somebody out in midair and clubbing him across the head and ultimately fracturing Gary's elbow. He broke the code. Dylan Brooks broke the code.
Pretty big statements from Steve Kerr. Again, Jalen, he said it was dirty. He said that Dylan Brooks broke the code. Do you agree?
I think it was a flagrant foul, but I don't think that he was trying to flagrantly injure Gary Payton II. There have been many times where all of us have been in that position where you know an athletic player is coming. Like, Dylan Brooks, remember what happened in game one. You remember the highlight dunk that Gary Payton II had? Mm-hmm. So I looked at that as he was just trying to whack his arm so that he wouldn't get a dunk. I didn't look at it as like he tried to there's a difference when you're trying to clothesline somebody or try to slam somebody to the ground. I didn't think that that was his initial intent. But we're also going to go by the result. And the result is his elbow is injured and he's going to be out for a while.
That said, I mean, you can be reckless without being intentional. Is it a dirty play? I mean, dirty feels like it's a specific word to use. Is that a dirty play?
I think it's a very hard foul. I didn't look at that as a dirty play. Like, I've been in a game where I got clotheslined before, fell on my head, and got carried off the floor in convulsions on a stretcher. And so I didn't see this as that. And I'm going to, again, judge it by the result. If he gets up and goes to the free throw line, we're not talking about it the same way. But since he got injured the way he did, we will.
Who clotheslined you and then you had to go off the court?
Ken Conley is his name. He went to Cooley High.
This is high school.
Look, it's right on the tip of his tongue. It's like all these years.
I received.
He didn't even hesitate to come up with that name.
Yeah, you know somebody that clotheslined you. Yeah. And at that point, Duncan wasn't important to me anymore.
Okay. Exactly. Okay, fair enough. All right, so that's that game last night. Let's go to the other game last night. I don't know what to make of this series between Milwaukee and Boston. So we had Game 2 last night after the Bucks really dominated Game 1. And then J.J., Giannis, so spectacular in Game 1. Last night, the defense on him was spectacular.
Give Al Horford a lot of credit. Grant Williams a lot of credit. Yep. Both of them did a great job individually. But again, Boston's defense, like they did in the first series against Kevin Durant, they're going to load two star players.
He had only 5 points in the first half. And then Timmy Legler, it was Jaylen Brown who just took over the show.
I give him a lot of credit because he knows how poorly he played in game one. He addressed it, he owned it, and he came out with a completely different mindset. But their ball movement helped him get into rhythm.
He had 25 in the first half. The Celtics had a 25-point halftime lead. Here's more from Brown again in the third quarter there to clean up the mess. Jason Tatum also played much better, and so here they are. So, Jalen, okay. Mm-hmm. So here's the proof again. I don't know anything because after game one, I'm thinking, well, that's over. And Milwaukee clearly has their number. Giannis is just too good. And then it's 65-40 at halftime last night in favor of Boston. How do you explain
that? The game changer was Jaylen Brown. He really struggled in game one. He was out of control. He was off balance. He wasn't able to be effective. In game two, he came back with aggression. And also, I want to acknowledge Grant Williams. Here's a player to me that's opened my eyes in this playoffs. He played really well against the Nets, did a great job of defending on the perimeter, in particular against Kevin Durant. And he's also making shots and scoring points. If you're going to get 21 points for Grant Williams, that's borrowed money in a lot of ways. And Jaylen Brown gives you 30. So great character win by the Celtics. They showed a lot of toughness.
You mentioned him earlier, Legs, and a guy who has come off the bench, knows his role, and playing an important role. But I want to go back to the question I asked before. How do we assess this series now when each game, they could not have looked more different? Mm-hmm. And, you know, both teams, I think, really sort of asserted. They did it without Marcus Smart last night. Where is this series now?
I mean, listen, coming in, I thought it was a coin toss series. I said Milwaukee's going to win this series because I think Giannis is a differentiating factor. I just think he's different. And he hasn't played very well offensively in either game. And I think he's going to be more efficient at some point in the series. And he's going to kick in. It's going to come down to, ultimately, I think, how Boston plays offensively. If they get the ball out of their hands as quickly as they did last night, I picked 3 plays for a potential touchscreen. I had 8 written down from the first half alone. The decision-making of catch it and immediately get it to the next open green jersey.
Correct.
And then to the next guy, Jalen, yeah. And then the up fakes.
Absolutely.
Let the guy fly into a gap. If they play that way offensively combined with what they're capable of defensively, Boston can certainly win the series. I just think Milwaukee has more to show defensively now in reaction to this.
JJ, I want to give so much credit for the Celtics to the Celtics for that, to their coaching staff and to their players. Because how many times did we have this conversation during the Nets series? Mm-hmm. Oh, they need to move the ball more. They need to exactly. And they That's never did it. Point. They didn't even look like they tried to do it. The Celtics in one game completely seemed to change what they were doing this, offensively.
I'll give Legs some credit here because this was his big talking point on this series yesterday. There's a notion of good to great. We hear it all the time. Coaches talk about it. Players talk about it. You can come off a pick and roll and have that pull-up jumper. That's a good shot. But attacking downhill, getting into the paint, swing, swing, all of a sudden you're getting a great three. And that's backed up by the numbers. Look, they had 38 made field goals last night. 28 of those were assisted.
And then the other side of it, for me, the Celtics, it always comes down to the defensive end. They gave up 40 points in the first half last night. The game is over, and five to Giannis. So is that the difference in the series?
And that's who the Celtics are. And as you mentioned, they were playing without Marcus Smart. But what I want to acknowledge to you is this is what happens when you're going to have a long series. Mm. So a lot of times you see game one, and your eyes tell you that team has to be better. I remember this happened in Minnesota and Memphis. They win a game. It's like, no way Memphis can beat Minnesota. This just showed you the character of the Celtics and why they're not the Nets. That's why we're so mad at the Nets.
Yeah.
They're the only team that didn't win a game because they didn't respond. They didn't show resolve. The Celtics are not the Nets.
Yeah, and the only idiot who said the Nets were going to go all the way to the finals is me, and it couldn't look possibly worse. And so now now they go back to Milwaukee. How different is it offensively for Giannis at home? For the they're still playing all those big guys in there are going to be difficult. How different is it?
It is, and I also think your role players take on a different energy at home. Like you're going to have some of those guys put more of an imprint on this series as well. It's going to start with Giannis, though. He has not been very efficient offensively in either of these two games. Now, game one, even though he didn't shoot well, he was by far the most dominant player on the floor. You can't say he was the most dominant player last night. That was clearly Jaylen Brown, and probably Tatum was the second best player in that game. So Giannis has to, at some point, and it's probably going to be game three, he's going to have one of those 13 for 19 type games where he has 37 and does it efficiently. And that changes everything defensively because now all those three-point shooters have more time.
Quick thought.
I'm not saying he's not, but we said the same thing about Kevin Durant for four games, and he didn't. He didn't have an efficient scoring night. Maybe Boston's defense is that good, and this is where I think the Bucks really, really miss Chris Middleton and his shot creation and his two-man partnership down the stretch with Giannis. That is their closing play, is a 3-5 pick and roll with those two guys.
Put a ribbon on it for me.
Giannis is going to be dominant. He's going to be the difference maker. He's going to ultimately be the reason why the Bucks advance.
Right, we will have all these games this weekend for you. We'll be together all week at Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and night, Sunday afternoon. Fabulous NBA playoff action. In the meantime, speaking of fabulous playoff action, the chase for the cup continuing last night. Panthers hosting the Capitals. Game one of that series. Third period. Panthers leading at 2-1. Panthers with the puck. They're looking to make something happen. But Alex Ovechkin has other ideas. He's turning defense into offense. A little poke check steal, and we're going the other way, and that's Evgeny Kuznetsov with a one-on-one look, and he takes it upstairs for the goal. Take another look. It's defense, it's offense, and we're all tied up at two. Just over 2 minutes later in the action, Panthers have the puck. They're going to turn it over again, and it's going to be Nicholas Backstrom making a great pass here to TJ Oshie, and Oshie is going to flick it home for the goal. That proves to be the game winner. The Caps would tack on an empty net or later. They'd win it 4-2. They take game one of that series. We've got four game twos coming your way tonight, including Bruins Hurricanes, 7 Eastern on ESPN, Lightning Leafs on ESPN2 at 7:30, and then we continue the action. Wild and the Blues and the Kings looking to get their series, take a 2-0 advantage. The road to the Cup rolls on here on ESPN. Coming up, we saw what he said, but what did it mean? One of Lamar Jackson's former teammates has his take on where this is bound in Baltimore. We will do that, and we will do this. Graziano, here we go. Hembo's ready for you. Which Super Bowl-era quarterback started the most NFL games before turning 25 years old? That's the question. The answer's next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more.
Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Start your mornings with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern, they answer the pressing questions around the sports world.
Let's talk about Steph's legacy.
They're going to probably draft an explosive guy.
And deliver their hot takes on breaking news and new developments.
The Lakers are one of the worst jobs in the NBA.
Tune in every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
All right, we are back, and here is the moment, the matchup we look forward to every single day, Sneaky Hembo against Graziano. Which Super Bowl-era starting quarterback started the most games before turning 25 years old?
I have what I think is a good guess, right? Because Jameis Winston just turned 28, which means he turned 25 3 years ago, and he had already played four full NFL seasons. I know he had a suspension, but still, he must have started about 60 games. That's my guess, Jameis Winston.
It's a very good guess, but it's not right. It's Drew Bledsoe.
How close was I?
59. Winston, 54.
Oh, all right.
You were four away. It's Bledsoe, then Josh Freeman.
Bledsoe.
Then Jameis Winston, then Lamar Jackson, who we're going to talk to in a moment.
Really?
That's a fair, yeah, Josh Freeman.
Winston isn't even the Tampa Bay guy with the most.
And yet, so Graziano, still up a field goal. I think that's a reasonable margin.
He needed it.
That's a tough question. I mean, Hembo was just gotten to be.
That's good, though. Good question.
Oh, no.
I liked it. I enjoyed the question.
He's a very small man. I mean, he's asking you impossible questions at this point. That's what's going on here. Anyway, Graziano's still up a field goal. We're all rooting for him. All right, let's do three's keys. RG3, he's got some takes. And it's going to begin with the latest on Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. So I want you to hear Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback in Tennessee, and what he says about the idea that it's now going to be his responsibility to mentor the young quarterback, Malik Willis. Here's what he said.
Best part of being in a quarterback room in the same room. You know, we're competing against each other. We're you know, watching the same tape. We're doing the same drills. I don't think it's my job to mentor him, but you know, if he learns from me along the way, then that's a great thing.
Okay, RG3, what'd you think of that?
Woo. That'll do it. Ryan Tannehill not wanting to mentor Malik Willis is a recipe for disaster for the Tennessee Titans. Yes, it's not in his job description to mentor Malik, but as a leader, it is his job to lead the entire team. So when you look at what he's doing, he's showing that the pressure is already getting to him. And as a leader, you're supposed to help the young buck. Ryan Tannehill has to check his ego at the door because leadership comes with the cost of ego.
That's really well said. Three. Okay, next one. The Jets. How about my J-E-T-S? Jets.
Greeny, ooh-wee. Don't look now, but the Jets look like they're ready for takeoff. They dominated the NFL draft, and in the first three rounds, they got a shutdown corner in Sauce Gardner, a number one receiver in Garrett Wilson, a pass rusher who plays like his hair is on fire in Jermaine Johnson, and they went out and got a three-down back in Breece Hall. I see you, Joe Douglas. You look like Will Sasso, but nobody in the league is laughing at what you're doing with this Jets roster.
I love this segment. One more. The Marquise Brown getting traded to Arizona. Lamar Jackson all upset about it. You played there. You know these guys. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I think Lamar Jackson had a human reaction in a moment where Marquise Brown got traded away from the Ravens. These two are closer than any two teammates I've ever seen. They do everything together, work out, hang out, ride to the game together, and they gave back to the community in South Florida. So I think Lamar Jackson's reaction, even though he knew that a trade was possibly likely, since Marquise let him know back-to-back years that he requested a trade, I think that he just reacted like a human being, and athletes are allowed to be human.
That's fair. That's an interesting point. But Graz, the fact that Lamar has not yet signed a contract extension in Baltimore, and that from everything we understand, that's his decision, not the team's decision. How should we read that, particularly in the context of his tweets last week?
Well, so I don't think the tweets last week really have much connection to that, honestly. Like, my sense, I don't get the sense that people in Baltimore are too worked up
about Lamar Jackson and his mood. I think they feel like he's fine and he's focused on the right things. The contract is the contract, and it'll happen in whatever time frame they agree it'll happen. But I mean, you talk to people there, they talk about a guy, and Robert can maybe back me up or tell me I'm wrong. I don't know. A guy who's singularly focused on winning a Super Bowl to the point where there are some people there who actually have a theory that maybe that's one of the reasons he hasn't done the contract yet. Yeah. Maybe he feels like he hasn't sort of earned it somehow. So he's a different kind of guy from what I understand, but not a guy who's going to be making any problems.
Booger, I mean, we were there when it happened, and the trade took us all, you know, took everybody to some degree by surprise. But now that the dust has settled, how about where Baltimore sits right now with Lamar as their quarterback?
Well, I think, you know, you really shouldn't be surprised. Hollywood Brown is a receiver that wants to football. And quite honestly, Baltimore's offense is not necessarily predicated or dominated by the pass. And so I think they made an organizational decision. When they drafted Lamar Jackson, they're going to build around him and his strengths. And until he becomes a better passer, more consistent passer, it's going to be tough for them to get a veteran receiver to come or to stay there, especially when you see what these guys are doing other places. Hollywood Brown is really simple. He's seeing these receivers get 1,500, 1,600 yards, and he's saying, hey, I'm not being given these opportunities in Baltimore, so yeah, I want to get out, even though I'm super close to Lamar Jackson. So I think this is just a product of the path that the Baltimore Ravens have decided to go. But I will say this, Greeny, based on the way that Lamar Jackson plays, there is no way in hell I would step on the field again without a new contract. It's in his best interest business-wise to get that deal done before the season starts. If you're Baltimore, you're cool. Let's slow play this thing. But if you're Lamar, RG3, you know him, somebody needs to tell this young man from a business standpoint, I don't care how much competitive fire you have. I don't care how much you want to win a Super Bowl. From a business standpoint, get your money, young man.
I have to leave it there. I wish I could follow up on that, but First Take's going to start whether we're ready for it or not. Awesome work, guys. First Take, top of the hour here. They're talking about John Morant. They're talking about Steve Kerr's comments. Stephen A. Molly and the Mad Dog, top of the hour here on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Get Up is brought to you by the Walt Disney World Resort 50th anniversary celebration, and we have run out of time. We'll be coast to coast on ESPN Radio in 60 seconds. The fun continues with First Take now.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.